So, welcome in Paris. 25 years of career, some of our readers might have never heard of you. Could you kind of, I think the little game, to try to sum up the band in three words? What would be your three words? Can you kind of sum up the band?
The living end.
Yeah, good.
Rock and roll.
Any element of the band you want to emphasize?
Oh, it's really hard to narrow it down to three words.
Bass, drums, guitar. There you go.
Yeah,
that goes with the logo as well, you know.
The magic for you.
I haven't chased them out.
So you released about 2 years ago Shift?
Yes.
If we take all this period, Shift, so from recording to tour, promo and so on, is there one event or one souvenir in particular in your mind that would kind of sum up this whole period from the Shift album? Anything that struck your mind immediately? One show, one event, one gig, one...
Shift, it sums up Shift. Yeah, I just remember that day that we were jamming and we ended up getting the song One Step out of it. What happened? It was like, pick a key to play in. Okay, F, something, F sharp. Pick a key and play a drum beat, and now let's play something on top. And we just started playing whatever came to mind. It was just a full improvisation jam.
Yeah.
And turned into the first song off the album, Shift, One Step. Which I just love it. I love the way it came together, because the album did come together like that.
Yeah.
It was like, take bits of this, take bits of that. Chris had a hard drive of hundreds of old ideas for songs that never got used. New ideas, songs that he'd written for a solo record, all sorts of ideas, and we were just basically hand picking and stitching together all these different ideas, and then there were ones that came up on the spot as well. But it was like a collage making that album, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like,
which is kind of an unusual creation process for you. It's a bit of an experiment,
aren't we? When, by the time we go into the recording studio to hit the red button, we're usually a lot more prepared. The songs are normally more
structured,
more structured and more complete. Whereas this one, we did it over a lot of sessions, like a few weeks here and a few weeks there and a few weeks here and a few weeks there, sessions in the recording studio rather than spending a whole lot of time in the rehearsal studio.
And so for Wunderbar, did you use the traditional way, or you try to continue
more so back to our traditional way, where we would rehearse the songs and have them fairly complete by the time we go to pre-production, and then do a couple of weeks with the producer, and then the recording process would just be capturing the song rather than working on the song. We went back to more of a framework like that, but we did it very quickly. We didn't allow ourselves much time to do it, so a lot of loose ends. There were still a lot of loose ends when we went in to record that we had to like make some pretty quick decisions about.
In the article you can read on the online or in magazine, it's often emphasized the fact that it's the shortest period between two release of two records. Because you put pressure on yourself to try to go as fast as possible, why 2 years and before you needed 3 to 5 years most of the time?
I just don't think we wanted to wait 5 years again between records. And I remember when we finished Shift, we were all feeling pretty energized and excited creatively. And I just remember going, can we not wait another 5 years between records? It's crazy. You know, I mean, everyone's getting older. And we felt like we had a lot of ideas still. And as Scott said, I mean, I've got a hard drive. It's got like 300 songs or something on it. And they're all killer. No, they're not. But there's a lot of good ones on there. So it's we just want to get into that thing of just kind of, you know, releasing music, touring, writing, creating, and just keep that momentum going, I suppose. And the other thing was that we signed a worldwide deal with BMG. And this was sort of like in, I don't know, July or August or something. And then we said, well, let's make a record. And then we thought, well, looking at the timeline, we wanted to come here at this time to do summer festivals and do exactly what we're doing. So we thought, well, it'd be great to have the album released before we come here.
Yeah.
So that means maybe releasing it in May, and that means recording it in January.
Yesterday.
And this is in September, and we're going, that means we need to write yesterday.
And then to have it written now.
Yeah. So that's why, but anyway, what happened was we recorded the album, and we went, between us three and our producer, we went, it's just too good to rush it out in May. So that's why it's been pushed back to September.
Yeah.
But initially, yeah, we thought, all right, well, let's go to Germany and record, because we love the European market, and BMG Germany showed a lot of interest in the band. So yeah, it was just, okay, let's start writing as much as we can, as quickly as possible.
Before, you had only deals based on continent, or for North America, for Europe, or Australia. So you had local deals, I would say. For the first time, you get a worldwide deal?
Pretty much,
not the first time. We used to put our records out worldwide through major labels and stuff, but the last few records have been a bit more independent. And this one's, well, it's sort of, record companies changed a lot since we first started putting out.
For the best or the worst, I don't know.
Record labels, the whole industry is different now, the way deals are structured and all that sort of stuff. But I must say, what happened was, we were planning on celebrating the 21st anniversary of our first album and going around and playing our first album and doing that. But then when BMG and promoters in Europe and stuff, towards the end of last year, started showing a real interest in us, and I think within the band as well, we were like, well, fuck, I mean, we can go around and play our first album anytime, and that'll be fun, but it just doesn't feel like, it feels like we're moving backwards if we do that, and we still feel like we've got a lot of road ahead of us to move forwards, so we just came the idea of doing the nostalgia trip and just went, yep, look, there's record company, promoters, fans are interested in us in hearing new stuff. Let's just do it.
All right. Do you remember which the first song that was finalized, fully written for this new record?
Not like the Other Boys or something.
Just think about it.
And second part of the question: do you think that one way or the other, the first song kind of colored the rest of the album, or it can be completely different?
There's definitely points in the creative process to, you know, when Chris is bringing all of his ideas into the rehearsal room, there's always a point where me and Andy will go, oh, that bit, or that song, that's the kind of record we've got to make. And I think, I can remember it happening with Not Like the Other Boys. I just remember hearing hearing that chorus and going, the way it all just jumps up and gets really intense, and I was like, fuck, that's such a powerful moment, that's what you need on an album, is those kind of moments. But
yeah, but the first one that was written of the ones that ended up on the record was Amsterdam, which is funny because that's the one that set it up with no one else playing on it except me.
Yeah,
but yeah, Not Like the Other Boys, remember, it was the whole song was like, it was really busy.
Yeah.
And we kept referencing the beat stakes, going, yeah, it sounds like something like, you know, they would kind of do. And,
yeah.
But yeah, I think that was one of the first ones we kind of sort of jammed on. And again, I think we just went, you know what, this is a different kind of, it was inspiring.
But I think it really, from the shape we had it in Australia, so when we got into the studio with Tobias,
it changed,
and he made it, he took all the good bits and made them better. And he challenged us so much, particularly with that song.
You need someone pushy, not on a technical point of view, saying you could do better or do something different.
But it was his approach with us was, you play too much, calm down, and, you know, as Chris said, the verses were all, you know, they were really quite busy, and Tobias said, bring it back, change your approach, be a little bit less, be more subtle, and then when you do hit big bits, it stands out so much more. So I remember fondly recording that one. He challenged me a lot on that one. From a drumming perspective, he made me record it without cymbals, and then we overdubbed the cymbals later, because there's certain bits in that song where he wanted the drums to be right there. And with the cymbals in, if you're recording everything together, the cymbals sort of eat everything else. So it was a real challenge for me, but really exciting.
But when we allowed ourselves for him to have an influence, which was good, we could have been more stubborn and be like, no, this is our band, you know.
Because one way or the other, you know what you want, you know what
you want. And also, we didn't know him very well. We only had a few small sort of recommendations to go by.
So you travel from Australia
to Berlin.
To work with a guy you're not even sure could fit your needs.
Yep, totally. We really did jump in at the deep end. And, you know, for the first couple of weeks when we were doing pre-production, it was like, okay, now we need to be prepared here. If we don't get along well with this guy, we need to be prepared to stand up for ourselves and say, no, we're not fucking doing it that way, we're doing it this way, or whatever. I think we've sort of had a bit of a guard up at the beginning, and there was definitely a period of, you know, like a couple of dogs sniffing each other out. He was sniffing us out, we were sniffing out his behind. He was sniffing our asses, and we liked what we smelled, and we got along well together. We had a nice little play.
But I remember it was pretty instant, though. It was the very, very first day we kind of got in this tiny room. He plays guitar as well, so he plugged into an amp, I plugged into an amp. We all just started playing something, and it was like, okay. It wasn't that awkward kind of like, so, you know, what are you into? What's your hobbies? It was just, we gelled with him immediately.
Okay, so not so much chatting than playing all together.
Not a lot of chatting, you know. We just, the language.
The language of music was pretty easy to talk, yeah.
Excellent.
And we loved food together. We ate, he took us to all the
very room. Important.
No, but it is. We bonded
food
over.
And coffee.
We bonded over food and coffee. And I think that's a, having a break when you're working on music and going and having some really good food and enjoying it together was...
Yeah, feed well your customers, it's always good. After 20 years of career, more than 20 years of career, you still need this, do you think still there's an added value from an external point of view? Someone who could, as you mentioned, slightly change the way you go for the best?
Yeah, I think it's really good, yeah. I mean,
probably more so now.
We have a... We've got an identity or the sum of our parts or whatever that is always going to be what it is, and it's out of our control. I mean, it's totally in our control, but we can't control it. It is what it is. And there's something there that will never be broken, but I still think that it's really important for someone else to come in and be welcomed into the family of this and then get their perspective on it and see how it looks from there. Because we're so close to it.
We're probably
precious about things that don't really fucking matter.
And you were mentioning even more now.
I think it's more beneficial to us now because we're able to take not so much criticism but suggestion, and we're big enough and old enough now
to not
get offended by him saying, why don't you try and simplify that? You know, that 5 or 10 years ago we might have gone, no, we're going to make it even busier now. But now, we're more willing to be mould of, you know, listen to opinions and...
We're more aware of ourselves.
And particularly when it's someone like Tobias who we feel really, you know, like he's got a great musical... musical brain.
So from Vunderbar, there's no pieces or leftovers from Shift? It's brand new, all brand new. You told us you gather a lot of ideas.
Yeah, there is, but not that were written for Shift. There's
in total, how many songs did you write, and how did you sort the songs?
Well, decide? Heaps of written. Chris has got a briefcase full of blues. That's why I can't talk. I'm thinking of it. Blues Brothers. A briefcase full of ideas and songs in all sorts of shapes and sizes and variants or whatever. There's hundreds of them. Yeah, but as far as what we had a go at for this album, there was probably like 20, right? We didn't stretch it too far, did we?
20 you went until the end, or 20 you discard pretty quickly the one you...
Oh, no, it started at...
And we had 20 songs, like, complete.
It started at much higher number, and but...
Yeah, remember when Kangarilla Road,
yeah.
Went on.
Yeah, there was so many ideas that were created through that writing process, but we were fairly quick to say, that's an awesome song, but it's not going to work. Mm. That's an awesome song, but it's not going to fit this record. We had a fairly good idea early on. There was a few that came and sat up on the water, that, you know, that floated to the top. And we went, well, if it's not as good as that, then it can't make the record.
Mm.
So we were pretty strict on the top 20.
It's amazing how the brain works, though, right? Because with something like Vampires, where we had the verse and then we had a different chorus and we were like, oh, that's great, and Andy really liked it, but I was like, nah, I'm not sold on it, and we just went back and forth for weeks. And I remember one day just going, oh, I've got a song from like 17 years ago on a hard drive somewhere in my house that I think that chorus will fit. And like you just go back through like the filing cabinet in your head and you find something, and then like you were asking about, was there anything from Shift? Well, this was from like 3 years before Shift. I had this chorus and I knew it was a good chorus, but it didn't have the right kind of verses. Just found that and sort of like just sort of slotted in, and off
there was
went.
A spark, and then
yeah, and Drop the Needle was the same. That was the verses of that were for a completely different song, long that I'd already recorded without the guys when I was working on like some solo stuff. And again, it was like, fuck, it's such a great verse. And then, you know, one day if the idea is good enough, one day it'll see the light of day.
So there's no more B-sides, so all these finalized songs?
Oh, there's a bloody ripper, but we can't tell you anything about it because it's top secret. But there's a song that we couldn't quite finish for the record for one reason or another, but it's so good, and we're hoping that we can get it together.
All right.
We've got the basic...
Sounds like this.
We've got the basic track done, and we're really, really stoked on it, but we have to find the right... things to finish it off, and then that might get released down the track.
Okay, so in 50 years, we might find the hidden chest of all your songs, like, you know, Prince, who just the label released like 20 albums.
There's a few of them.
Well, that's one thing about us, is that we've never been short of songs for a record, which is good and all, but it's not about quantity, is it? You know, sometimes I think, would it be better to have just written 10 absolute killers?
Oh, yes.
But you might not, you know, we always experiment, we always end up with just going through, you know, I'm a bit of a punisher, to be honest with you. I'll go, I've just got these other 5 songs I want you to hear, play them through the garage band that I've just mucked around with at home, and, yeah, it's good, but it's not us. Yeah, well, what about this one? Yeah, keep it for something else.
But how important, when you write a song, how important is the catchiness of the song? Is that the key element? In two minutes you can memorize it and can.
Yeah. It's got to have a hook, whether it's a lyric, whether it's a melody, whether it's a riff, whether it's a drum pattern, whatever it is, it's got to have something. And that's generally we'll latch onto something. It might be a guitar sound, and that becomes the basis of that.
Well, no one finishes a song from a shit idea.
No, for sure.
Do they? You know, it's you never go, well, this is kind of
the radio. Have you listened to the radio recently?
No, but we've never gone, wow, this is pretty fucking average. Oh, let's keep going on it. Let's finish it off. Oh, it's still sounding shit. No, let's finish it. We'll work on something for a while and go, it's not grabbing us for whatever reason. So there's always that. It's got to have something going for it in order for it to get to that completion.
So if there's a song, you find it nice, but there's the magic missing?
Sometimes
you put it on the side and waiting to see if in 3 years after that or 5 years the magic's gone?
Yeah, or just save it for a different project, you know? Like,
you just
know. I've written like country songs with like pedal steel and stuff on them, and it's... And you guys have heard some of it, and you know, we all write different things. It's like, yeah, it's a cool song, but it just doesn't really fit what we're trying to do with this record. And just leave it for something else further down the track, maybe.
It might be a stupid question, but I ask. What's the impact of using a double bass has on when you write a song?
Never been asked that.
Is that very different? I think it's hugely different.
When it comes to the swing thing, slap thing, that makes a huge difference because it has a percussive element that the bass guitar doesn't really have. It's got a different different style.
I think there's a real the mechanics of him playing a big double bass is completely different to when he's playing a, because he very, very rarely, but sometimes, plays a plug-in electric bass, and he's not the same. He's not the same player. There's something about what he.
I can't play electric bass to save my fucking life. It's like,
I know, but that it's quite a funny idea, isn't it? That this guy that can shred on a big thing, double bassy guy, can't really. He doesn't have the same feel on a simple scale, you know, normal scale guitar. So there's a magic that happens when he plays the double bass. So I think it sounds like the band, doesn't it? Every time we play, that's a big part of it. And the same with Chris's guitars; they don't sound like many other people's guitars.
And with your experience playing within the band or with other musicians, do you is there always a special relationship between the drummer and the bass or double bass player?
Always,
compared
yeah.
to the guitar player, even if it's doing rhythm guitar, or the singer.
Especially for a fucking three piece, man, you've got to be like locked in both ways, all three of us. These guys need to be locked in. We need to be locked in. We need to be. You know what I mean? There needs to be like a, I don't know how many it is. 1, 2, 3 times 3, a fucking nine lane highway.
Yeah, it's
all going to be locked in with each other, and you know, if we join in on something and he does something different, that changes like the dynamics. If we do something similar and he does something different, you can change the dynamics so much with just three.
Mm.
So I think I think that's what makes the relationship really special and really kind of unique, is that we're a trio. Mm.
The way I like to look at it is you have the sausage.
Okay.
Right. And then you have the fritz.
What if you're a vegetarian?
You're getting hungry.
And it's for me, it's like this. It's rock solid sausage and fritz. And I'm like the fancy little currywurst sauce that can just wear my tiara and my feather boa on top, and you know, they allow me to just go float around, and you know. But if that solid sausage and fritz is not there, the whole thing crumbles. So.
All right. Interesting image.
Yeah,
but it is
an interesting image.
So sometimes during gigs, the one of you, I don't know, is speeding up without me being noticing, or
and so
you
him,
have,
yeah.
you, or you have to adapt immediately to.
Well,
or can you allow yourself, especially during live shows? I suppose it's also one of your pleasure to kind of move a little from the.
Of course.
From the.
We do.
Structure.
That's the best thing about the band. Yeah. Not the best thing, but it's one of the best things, is that no show is the same, I don't think. We take risks. I mean, even the other day, we were playing in front of 50,000 people with the Totenhosen in Germany.
Yeah.
And there was one point...
It was only 45.
Oh, what were we playing? We were playing something. And I remember just playing like it was a solo and stuff, and playing something really different to what I've ever played before, but feeding off each other. And just, it's not like, well, it's a lot of people out there, we've got to play it real safe and just, you know, as we rehearsed one time from the top. It was like, fuck it, it's a rock and roll band, and in the three piece you can improvise, you can switch it up, and we do nightly, and sometimes it can end in a train wreck, but sometimes it can be that special magic moment, and that's what people get off on. Whether they know the band or they don't, they see a band like really going for it, and they know it's not like rehearsed.
But that's the background of the band, isn't it? Like playing 50s rock and roll music, there was the verses and choruses for the songs, but they were all fucking 12 bar blues in A. They were all the same, pretty much the same tune and the same beat and stuff. So every time you'd go into a guitar solo, it was like going into improv.
Yeah,
land a little bit, so like what the jazz guys used to do.
So you continue to surprise each other for the best of the worst, I don't know, but...
We do.
Most of the time for the
best. I like to just go, oh, fuck, I'm sick of playing like that. I'm going to switch it up, and as I said, it doesn't always work, but I reckon we got that from listening to Stray Cats records, you know, all their old bootlegs. For me, as an influence, like Brian Setzer is just a phenomenal guitar player, and we used to get all these bootleg records and stuff, and he was always playing different stuff, and they were always mixing it up, and it was so exciting to not just go, well, it sounds exactly like the record.
Yeah,
and I knew he was going to play that.
You'd get a live record and you'd be like, oh, I wonder what the solos he's going to play in this one. And you know, it was still, even though the same songs were on each bootleg live thing that we got, it was always like, oh, I wonder what he's going to play in that bit there in this one. And yeah,
but it was always good.
And that's what, yeah, I think that's wrapped off on us. Mm.
How important, in your point of view, is the visual, the cover picture of the album? And how did you work this one? Is that important for you? Or you don't?
Yeah, yes. It is, yeah.
It is? So how did you work this one?
I just got the weirdest vibe going through my ear. It was like maybe tinnitus or something.
Yeah, shouldn't have hit the drum so hard.
Yeah. The photo for the album... The album cover took forever. It went through many, many changes and different ideas. Chris took a great photo when we were on tour in the middle of Australia. I don't think any of us had ever been that far out into... Like, it was the outback. You had to wear a fly net because there was, like, millions of flies. Incredible. Anyway, there was a wall that this bloke had made by hand, and he'd put rocks and mortar and, you know, and then there was a lawnmower.
And a fucking motorbike.
And a motorcycle. And there was an old television built into this brick wall. He built it by hand, and it was quite a... You know, people would go and look at it and take photos. Chris took this great photo of it, and that was, you know, something that we were really excited about. We thought, wow, that's a good cover. But then the more you looked at the photo, the one thing that stood out was the television. And we thought, wouldn't it be cool to focus in on that and have something particular in the television? And then basically it came from that, and then the artist that we were working with, we were having coffee together, the three of us, and it came on an email. And we'd basically gone back and forth with this guy over so many different drafts, but this came up, and we all looked at it over, it was almost instant for me. I just went, that's brilliant. And that's when we all decided, in the palm tree, it's like escapism. You can get to that ultimate fantasy place through the aid of a screen. And that's... After that, I think it was only a few hours after that that you came up with Wonderbar, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah, it was the same day.
I can't remember. Yeah.
It all happened really quick, and we all, you know, it's pretty hard to convince us quickly of our artwork, but it was...
I came up with some weird titles.
Yep. But that was, yeah, that was how it sort of evolved.
And different again for us, we just wondered...
Very different.
We've always, our album covers and stuff and titles have always had a running sort of theme, but we thought, fuck man, you've got to shake it up. You've got to come out with something that people go, wow, okay, I didn't expect that. Like, you have to do that these days or else you just get ignored. So that's how we approached some of the music too. It was like, just more extreme. Play it faster or perhaps play it slower. and same with the artwork. It's like, all right, that does not look like something that the Living End would normally do, but it works.
And what schedule in terms of video clips? You released one for Don't Lose It?
Yeah.
It's a lyric video, basically?
No.
You
haven't seen
it? No, there's an actual video clip that we made in Australia.
I've seen the one where you have...
Yeah, that lyrics. Was...
Where you have...
Biding time, basically, yeah. Until we...
No, all right. Video. We went to a big effort in Australia, actually, and we did a video which is like a takeoff of the Idol talent style singer shows or whatever, talent shows, where we were the judges of this show that we made up. And we had a whole lot of friends in Australia who were friends and like celebrities, basically, from the sporting world, from entertainment, from television, and from other bands and stuff like that, and they all would adopt a character and audition for the show, and it ended up turning into this fucking, like, this idea just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and all these people were really willing and able and happy to get involved in it, and it ended up being fucking funny as hell.
I wear a dress.
And really good. And it's
hard to see that
as a woman.
You gotta see it.
Yeah. And so anything else is planned already?
We've made two videos since we've been in Europe.
Yeah, we've got heaps of stuff happening between now and when the release of the album is, as far as singles, and we've made a little documentary about the making of the album. We did a show after we finished recording in Berlin. The day before we came home, we did a TV show in Berlin called Berlin Live or something. Matt's going to come out. There's a whole lot of stuff coming out between now and the album. So yeah, you know, stay tuned, folks.
All right. I think my time is almost up. Just two last questions. Mm-hmm. Nothing about the album. Is there a sound or noise you like, and is there a sound or noise you hate?
I love a true, beautiful guitar tone coming through an AC30, and I don't like a horrible guitar tone going through one of those like processed, nasty amp sounds. That's
all right. That's nice.
I don't like the sound of my alarm ringing in the morning. Even though I've got a good song, I still don't like it. And what sound do I like? I don't know. Waves?
Oh, that's a great...
I like the white noise of the ocean.
You live close to the ocean? Or?
I did for 5 or 6 years or something, and now I don't. And I miss it.
You miss it?
I really fucking miss it. Yeah.
I'm very comforted by the sound of a cat purring.
Is that right?
Very annoyed by the sound of a dog barking.
All right.
Isn't that funny? You haven't got a cat, but you've got two dogs.
All right.
No wonder I don't sleep.
So thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Why do you want to sleep?